I really need this to... Wait, what? It's not on?
It's time for the Liquorland Podcast with JoJo Lewis. Hey, folks, welcome to the show. Yeah! Woo! Thank you. Oh, goodness gracious. Thank you for coming to... Well, you didn't come anywhere. You just downloaded it. But I'm glad. Thank you so very much for listening to the third episode of The Liquor Lamp. I'm JoJo Lewis, and I am exhausted. Absolutely exhausted. It's not a metaphysical exhaustion. It's not the kind of exhaustion that comes from trying to, you know, be so many different things that it kind of hurts you. It's a literal physical pain. Like I'm every part of me aches right now, and I've been going hard at stuff all week, and it's catching up to me right now. I don't know what to do about it other than just press on. Like I've been. Here's the thing: when you're a comic, or when you're doing comedy, or really anything that you're really dedicating yourself to, it's an everyday thing. You know, it's not like I set aside, you know, okay, this is my comedy day. I don't have a cheat day for comedy. I don't have a cheat day for wanting to get in front of people and tell jokes. It's every day if I could do it, and I'm facing that right now. It's Friday as I'm recording this. For this episode, this opening, I've gone to a show every day since Sunday. So Sunday and Monday, I did the comedy spot. That's typical. Tuesday, I did Luna's. Wednesday, I did Stab, which is John Ross's quick fire comedy podcast. And I did that with Jacqueline Wyant and Jamie Fernandez and Jesse Jones, and it was an awesome show. It was super fun. And then after that, I recorded a podcast with John Ross, which is coming later. And then yesterday night, I did a show in Madison Ave. On Madison Ave, I think it was at a little sports bar. I did that one with Andrew Ouellette and Luke Soyne. And then from there, I went and did a set at On the Y, which, that puts your life in perspective. And tonight, I'm doing a show at a Lockdown Brewery. It's Steph Garcia's Laughs at Lockdown show, which is going to be exciting and fun. And I know these all sound like brags, and they're not. These are brags in the sense that, like, as a... Like if I was bragging to you about, okay, on Monday I worked out my arms and on Tuesday I worked out my legs, but on Wednesday I worked out my abs. Like that's how it feels to me. Because I'm not getting paid for any of these shows other than like a free drink here or there. I'm losing money on every show that I go to because that's what it's like when you're starting out with this or with anything. And it's exhausting. I mean, it's tiring to be out that late to live a nighttime life and to know that that's what you wanted, to know that like, okay, this is actually what I wanted to do with comedy. I wanted to be out all the time. I wanted to be a part of this kind of a nightlife subculture of people, and I wanted to, you know, entertain them with... you know, elaborate jokes about keys and eating people. And it sounds ridiculous when you put it into words, but it's true. The way that I am approaching my week right now is just, I got to get through it. And like, you know how you think about, okay, it's Monday morning. I got work today. I'm going to go to work today till Friday. And you're not going to really focus on it or think about it. Or you're just going to go almost like autopilot. Well, that's how it kind of feels. That's actually how it feels. It feels like a job. You know, it feels like I'm going to places just without even totally focusing on it. I'm doing the work. I'm doing the work. And I think that that's what it is, not just to be a comic, but just to be, if anything you're dedicated to, it's a job. It's like any other job. You get to a Zen state of just, I'm going to go there, I'm going to do my thing, and I'm going to come home and, play Star Wars, The Old Republic and eat ice cream. Oh, that sounds fucking awesome. Oh my God. Just as a side note, just as a pleasant side note, on Tuesday, I was at Luna's, and I got a message from my girlfriend, basically said, hey, Joe, I have a surprise for you. And my immediate reaction was, oh, this is going to be bad. Because I always err on the side of negativity and caution. And then she's like, no, this is wonderful, bordering on life-threatening. And I'm like, well, now I'm really freaked out. And then I drove home, and she was fine. She was, whole, and all her arms were there. And I was like, what's up? And she takes me to the kitchen, and she opens the fridge, and it's just, oh my God, you guys, it's just packed with ice cream. So much ice cream, you guys. And not like, oh, okay, it's got a gallon here, a gallon there. No, like novelties. Like it had the, like a Milky Ways and a Snickers and what's the other one? Twix, frozen, like the Twix bars. And there were Fat Boy ice cream bar things. And there were Fudgicles and there were orange Dreamsicles. And I may be wrong, but I think there were... Magnums. If you don't know what Magnums are, they're like if Fudgesicles went to a country club because they were fancy. That's how good these are. It's like eating just truffles. Oh, fuck, dude. I'm so hungry for ice cream right now. I don't know. It's weird. It's dessert enthusiasm. It's just wanting to have snacks. Well, anyway, this has gotten pretty far off the rails for what it was supposed to be. Today on the show, I'm talking to Mike Sella, who's a very cool guy, and he's a very he's a nice guy. I like Mike Sella. He co-runs the show at Luna's on Tuesdays. He also hosts a monthly comedy showcase at the Sacramento Comedy Spot called Comex. It's on the fourth Saturday of the month at 8:00. And that's always a wonderful show. It's really fun. You should check it out. But the thing with Mike Sella is he's a very aware, he's a dude who's very aware of himself. And I think that as a comedian, you got to kind of be that. And I'm going to say this. I know he's probably going to feel upset that I mentioned this, but I linked him our talk, like what we talked about, like 2 days ago. And yesterday he found me and he was like, I don't really think this talk should be released. And I said, why? And he said, because it makes me come off as really, kind of like an asshole. And in my head, I'm like, well, no, it doesn't. No, it doesn't. That's all you. It's all you thinking that. Because I think our talk today was really good. And it actually, the comics would probably know this, but there is kind of a sense of, I feel, there's a grass is greener element for comics that I don't know is true for other art forms or other activities. And I'll admit it, I've been jealous of Mike Sella. I have been. I've been jealous of that guy. And I talk about it in the show. I've been jealous of that guy. Also, I've really pissed him off before. And I talk about that too. And this show, this episode was really important for me because it made me realize that you can't just look at someone else's life and say, that's better or that's worse, because they're doing the same thing. They're doing the work that you're doing, or if they're not doing the work that you're doing, then they're jealous too. And it's just, it's a part of who we are. We all live these kind of separate sort of lives where we don't know what everyone else is doing. And, you know, talking to Mike, it kind of made me realize that. It kind of made me realize that I shouldn't, that it's a dangerous path to just want to compare yourself to others, and that is the way you judge your own merit. That's insane. And talking to Mike, it helped me know that. And it actually also helped me really understand what this podcast is for me. And you might actually hear it. So I'm done being weird for you guys. If you didn't listen to this opening, I don't blame you. Coming up after the cool transitional beats is my talk with the very funny Mike Sella. Please stay tuned. You're going to dig it. Yeah, you are. Here we go. One more time about that quick brown fox, if you don't mind.
The quick brown fox jumped over the lazy dog.
All right, killer. I think we have good sound.
Okay.
It sounds okay.
Yeah.
All right. So how are you doing, man?
Oh, well, I'm good. How are you?
I don't know how I am. I've been having a day.
Yeah?
I've been having a weird day.
Okay. I feel like we're just like old Asian ladies talking behind.
I know,
fans.
I know.
With the, yeah.
I know. It's the harshness of the having a thing I built.
Well, maybe we should start about talking on the podcast about things that people can't see. Have your other guests like brought up? Have you discussed your setup on the podcast?
Yeah. They've never described it.
Yeah, it's a point of interest to me. I mean, you got some PVC pipes, a couple of those 2x4s.
Yeah.
Some 10-pound weights.
And some 3-pound weights.
This is, I mean, yeah, you should give yourself credit. This is pretty cool. This is, I believe the professional term is jerry-rigged.
I think that would be the professional term.
Yeah, man, this is awesome.
Just something
And plenty of duct tape, which is how you, you know, jerry-rig something in the dictionary.
Is it?
Duct tape. Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Duct tape like and baling wire and yeah. Just, okay.
I'll check about.com.
To double, like, we'll have to.
It really
did,
when we were carrying this stuff down the street, it really did feel like we were about to go storm chasing.
You think?
Like, yeah, like we were about to go, you know, yell at a tornado.
It does have the kind of look
of
those
random numbers and say that they were the highest ones that we've ever had.
It does look like the kind of thing that would catch wind to see how, like, the little cup.
Yeah.
Things.
Yeah.
Just are spinning.
But I guess, yeah, it's something that would collect. Yeah, this could easily be weather related. Like a. Like one of those, water collectors, this could be a reservoir also.
I'm building a reservoir.
It's pretty cool. I'm just impressed. And if you haven't brought it up before, it's pretty sweet.
Yeah. I need to post a picture of like what it looks like when it's done.
Yeah. You could take like a picture.
Yeah. A picture would be good.
Yeah.
Cause then people would just know instead of having to have the auditory experience of,
do you have a social media site for your podcast?
No.
What is it called again?
The Liquor Lamp.
And what's the reason for that?
The reason for that is when I was in...
By the way, I'm interviewing you now.
I know, it's fine. No, it's back and forth. It's cool. A conversation. Oh, the reason why it's called The Liquor Lamp is when I was in grad school, some friends of mine threw a birthday party for me.
Mm-hmm.
As the first birthday party anyone's ever thrown for me as an adult, or as a kid too. It was a big moment. And two of my friends showed up to it not knowing it was my birthday. And they had just moved into their house and they had all this shit in their car still. And they were like, we'll give you something. And they went out and they gave me a Jack Daniels bottle filled with rainbow colored aquarium rocks.
Oh, so there wasn't any more Jack Daniels in it?
No, not a drop.
Oh, so that's kind of...
And the story of the lamp was, oh, there's this person who comes into my work and is really irritating, and he gave me this lamp, and now you can have it, because we don't want it in our house. So it was a hand-me-down sort of a gift.
That's a cool gift.
Yeah, and I liked it, because I was like, well, this is...
A cooler gift would have been if they poured the Jack Daniels into, like, you know, a glass or a jug and then also gave you the lamp.
But yeah, just like, here's a double gift. But no, it was,
see, the liquor lamp, that's right, I saw you post it on Facebook.
And no, the holding it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I just assumed it was something like some obscure, like, just term from, like the 1700s, like something that the founding fathers, like, wrote to. Like, you know, it's just like with some really, like, two-paragraph Wikipedia entry, like, the liquor lamp was literally passed around amongst the colonial rebels.
We could make that. It's not.
I just assume because I know you're writing a dissertation. I'm like, well, it's got to be some smart behind it.
No, it's a liquor lamp. Unintentional. It's an unintentionally sweet gift.
Yeah.
That wasn't meant to be.
And is that what this is? That's what I hope. To the world.
That's what I. Well, it's more like a gift to me, because I don't know many people, or I don't talk to people in long conversation setups.
Oh, so you just constructed like an environment in which you can do so.
Yeah, I built a whole machine.
A conversation
machine. So I can talk to people.
This is my
conversation machine. Yeah. Some people have a mouth. I have all this bullshit.
Yeah. Is there like a meter that reads your like social anxiety for 7 seconds?
It's actually on the MIDI box. It turns red when people are yelling and angry.
You just have another like graph that like, charts your progress, like after you're done, like maybe 18 podcasts, and then you can function like with society.
Yeah, I can just go up to someone and be like, "Hey, how about those sports teams?"
Yeah,
whatever people say.
Well, it's not going to give you sports knowledge, but we could turn on the World Cup if you want.
I don't know.
You would rather what? Die?
I would rather die.
You're not following the World Cup.
I'm not following the World Cup.
Mm. It's been pretty, a lot of soccer.
It's been pretty a lot of soccer.
No, it's been good. I mean, America won, so for starters.
So that's why it's good.
You're allowed to celebrate that.
I'm allowed. Yeah. Okay.
You are American, right?
I am.
Your headphones kind of look Caribbean, but
they do. But no, I'm American. I have a social security card with my name on it.
Montalvo, that's Italian, right?
No, that's Puerto
Rican. Spanish.
Puerto Rican.
Puerto Rican. Okay.
Yeah. Cool. It's supposed to be Montalvo.
Montalvo with a V?
Yeah.
What happened?
When my great-grandfather immigrated to this country and he went through Ellis Island, they were like, "Hey, what's your last name?" And they misspelled it, and then he never fixed it.
Yeah, I feel like people's names, like, they just never take a hard stand on it. It's like the name always just gets beat down to whatever people want to say in the end.
What's the origin of Sella?
It's Italian, but originally, like, and I think it stopped with my grandparents, they would say cello. That's how, you know, like, the instrument cello, it's pronounced the same way.
Really?
Except with an A at the end. But, yeah, I think at some point people mostly would just say cella, and I think, you know, we just gave up. And some people call me cello or recognize how to pronounce that and say cello. I never correct them. But I feel like there's one out of, like, 20 people who both know that it's cella and then also make it a point to like say it with an accent, like, "Hey, really? It's cella." Yeah, there's like maybe one out of 20 or 40 people.
So like,
in any social setting, like school or whatever, there's always the one guy who's like, "Hey, cella."
Like to impress you or to seem like they know. Shit.
I don't mind, but it's like that's the same guy that like also would like want to, you know, rhyme my name with that Rihanna song, you know, Umbrella. They'd be like, "Cella, Ella, Ella," just that same personality type. They're cool, but they like want to be your friend too hard. I don't know. Or maybe I'm just bad with people and I should just let them be my friend.
You're a language guy, aren't you? You went to school to study language, right? Maybe I'm wrong.
No, yeah, pretty much, yeah. So, I mean, you're saying that. Yeah, well, I guess what you're saying is, so I was a linguist in the Air Force. That was my first job after I enlisted.
You were
a link. The job title was Airborne Cryptologic Linguist. But that's not like, I didn't study languages.
Uh-huh.
You're just assigned a language, and mine was Chinese.
Okay.
And then after I got out, I ended up majoring in Chinese at UC Davis.
Okay.
So I do feel like I like languages, but it's just a one that I really learned. I mean, I'm learning Italian in the car right now.
Yeah, I saw the box of CDs.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that box is, the guy on there is pretty cool. Like,
yeah.
The lessons are, I don't know if they're intentionally funny, but, like, over the course of the conversations, like, you get rejected a lot. Like, it's like, they have you ask this girl out, and she just keeps saying no. And it makes you creative. Number one, I'm used to it. Number two, it's like, Yeah, you just have to, like, they literally teach you the time, how to say each hour, like, the numbers of each hour.
Uh-huh.
By just, like, asking her to have lunch with you at each one, and she says no, and then you pick a different one. Like, she'll say 8 o'clock in Italian, and then I'll say 8 o'clock, and she'll be like, no, not at 8. And then they ask you to say, what about 7? And then you're like, what about 7? She's like, no. And then you're like, okay, what about 6? And she just keeps saying no, and you just feel like a creep, because, first of all, no one has lunch at 8 o'clock, any 8 p.m. or a.m.
And then no one would be cool with you asking every single hour.
Yeah, 14 times. Yeah. And then at the end, you're supposed to pretend to have gotten it. You're like, oh, I understand. And instead of asking if you want to eat lunch, they ask, you change it to, like, do you want to get a drink? Like, so you don't actually ever catch on.
Okay.
That's what it feels like to me. Maybe that's just in my head. But
no, that sounds... Well,
it's
maybe,
sort of, like, funny without them ever outright trying, like, going for the joke. You know?
Maybe it's their way to get back at people who think, hey, I'm going to learn Italian to pick up chicks.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I heard. I mean, that's what it was on the Amazon reviews. So,
really?
Yeah, it was just, like, links to... no, it wasn't. I'm going to end that one there.
Okay.
Yeah.
So why did you get Chinese as the language when you were in the Air Force? Like, what was it was like? Did you choose to be the cryptological guy, or was that randomly?
Well, so I chose that job title. Like, you know, when you go talk to your recruiter, you can sign up for a certain job,
right?
You know, and I chose that, and then you have to test for it. And as long as you pass that test, you can be a linguist. Mm-hmm. But as far as them, they choose your language for you, and you get this sheet, this piece of paper where you can number all the different languages in order of your preference.
Uh-huh.
But it's commonly, it's just kind of a joke. Like they do it based on whatever they need to fill as far as classes go. So I had Chinese like fourth or fifth. I wanted to learn like Hebrew and Arabic. I thought those were cool.
Yeah.
And then time came and they were just like, yeah, you're in the Chinese class. And I was disappointed then, but now I'm like really glad, because it turns out Chinese is a little more relevant to like the world than like Hebrew. I'm glad that I got Chinese now. At the time, I thought it would be boring.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What did you actually do with, like, when you were in the Air Force? Like, what was your...
I spent, like, a year and a half at the Language Institute, which is in Monterey.
Right.
California. And then I graduated from that school and then went on to, like, several other small tech schools.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there was, like, an Intel school. There was, like, a survival school. There was, like, a... like an air crew school just for basic air crew stuff, like how to fly on planes.
Uh-huh.
And then once you get through all that, I got to my first base, and then they started like a new thing, a new project or whatever. And they basically, as if you're a linguist and you have like a language like Chinese or Korean, like you could probably surmise that we're not like fighting wars with them all the time.
Yeah.
So you're not really ever going to actively do stuff. They have stuff that you could do, but the need for those guys is not as much. So basically they took a lot of us who are already trained in some of those other areas, like other who are already flyers, like had completed air crew school and Intel school. They put them in another job. It was like a airborne type of recon thing. And I ended up doing that like for about a year. And then I got out.
So where did you serve at? Like where were you stationed?
So my first duty station was in, after I finished all those schools, was at Offutt Air Force Base, which is just outside of Omaha, Nebraska.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's a bummer.
Yeah, that's, you know what, again, like when I got, so you can, again, apply for duty stations, just like you could apply for languages and order them, and they never give a fuck like what you put. So, because the other option I had to go to was Kadena, which is in Okinawa, Japan.
Right.
So you might have guessed that I put that one as my first choice and Omaha as my second.
I would think Omaha would be a first choice, but go on.
And they're like, congratulations, you can go to Omaha. Because most people get stationed there. This is like a much bigger base than I could, you know.
Right.
So yeah, but it turned out that I really liked it. Like Omaha's a cool place.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I was right after 2 years, like I was like, all right, I've seen Omaha, but they have cool restaurants and like a cool music scene. And the thing about Omaha is just like it's far from everything, so you're just kind of there.
That's a good portion of the middle of the...
It's pretty smack dab in the middle, and they really just have like the Cornhuskers football team as far as like things to do, you know. Like you can do small city stuff, you know, like cafes and bars, but like if you want to go see something cool, You got to go to like Chicago or Denver, which are both like 7 hours north or west. Yeah.
Yeah. I remember I passed through Omaha on my way when I moved to the East Coast and I moved back. I passed through Omaha and I was like, this place is, I was like, let's look up things to do if we have energy when we stop at the hotel.
Yeah. You should have called me.
Yeah. I should have. I didn't know
you. You only had my phone number like 6 minutes ago.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Yeah. But if only I'd known like 3 years ago, like, hey, I wonder if there's a dude who's stationed at a base. I could have
pointed you to restaurants that you could have also found on Yelp. But, but there's some good ones. Yeah. No, I would go back and spend a good weekend there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but that's about it.
So was Omaha like the only place you were?
It's the only place that was my permanent duty station. I mean, so like that training I talked about took place over the course of a couple of years at like 6 different places.
Right.
And then I was down like in Iraq for a while. And then the more training in like, Mississippi and other shitholes. Uh-huh. But Omaha was like the one permanent duty station. I had. That's okay. What it's called. Yeah.
You got shipped over to Iraq for like how long?
It was 6 months. Yeah.
Ooh. How was that?
You
don't have to get into it.
No, it was fucking awesome.
Really?
No, I mean, yeah, I don't know. Maybe we should say, yeah, it's just, I was just talking about the other day, actually, because it hasn't been something I consciously thought about for almost ever since it happened. I got back. Like, just my experiences there. Like, I didn't ever, like, form conscious thoughts about them. I think I just kind of, like, chose not to, or maybe like subconsciously chose not to. I don't know for any particular reason, but I just realized recently, because I don't know if you've been following the news, but like now we're having more problems in Iraq. Uh-huh. Like the base that I was actually at has now been taken over by ISIS, like the
really?
Yeah, like the Sunni militant group there.
Jesus crazy. Christ.
So like just thinking about it, and then I actually was like, you know, I just, my brain started like kind of working it. But what was the original question? Because I just rambled.
Well, what was your experience like? Was kind of my question.
Well, in terms of like just adjectives I could place on it, it was like one of the best times I ever had, because I met some of my best friends and just had like some really, really good times with people.
Uh huh.
But like the experiences, I probably didn't enjoy too much. You know, like I had always constantly thought a lot of the time, like, well, you know, what are we doing here? Like, it was in the back of my head, and now, you know, it kind of quickly bore out that way. Anyway, I think anyone with their eyes open could have made the same assumptions, but yeah, like I was always comfortable with what was going on.
Did you ever get into any like combat situations or anything like that? Or
no, was it because more like... Well, I mean, I flew. That was my job. Took place on an aircraft.
Really?
So I was never like on the ground, you know, getting shot at. When I was on the ground, I was on the base, you know, inside the wire. But when we flew, you know, it was a combat sortie, and we'd go out there and yeah, but. We might have to scrap this whole thing.
You know? Why? Does it make you uncomfortable?
No. Just like some. Some things I'm not supposed to really say.
Oh. So, okay.
Can we splice that?
We can, I guess.
Cool.
Well, we don't know. I don't know what base you were at.
Just that one part about when I had the Pepsi the one day. Like, I don't want
people. You had a Pepsi.
I'm a Coke guy. So. I have sponsors that would be disappointed.
Okay.
I don't know if you saw the other day. Like, they took. Ronaldinho, his sponsorship away. He's a soccer player. I know you don't like soccer.
Are you worried?
He was drinking a Pepsi and he's Coke sponsored.
Are you worried you're going to get your comedy sponsorship?
Yeah, they
pay
me like $40,000 a minute to drink Coke. How's that Bacardi and Coke you're doing, by the way?
Oh, well, it's on the other side of the room, but Coca-Cola. When I was drinking it, it was quite
want
delicious.
Want me to grab it for you?
Yes, I would, actually.
Yeah, keep talking so we don't miss a beat.
Okay. See, the thing about Mike Sella is when he gets a cup is he walks all the way across the room and uses his right hand to pick it up. But then when he comes back, he hands it to you with his right hand also, which makes sense because that's the hand the cup was in. Seamless.
You should be like a commentator for, yeah.
For any number of sports that aren't the World Cup.
Yeah. Do you like any sports?
I'm not a sports guy. I never have been.
That Millennium Falcon shirt really does.
Yeah, it's the Millennium Falcon shirt with the tits behind it.
The tits. There's lots of... people with tits that like sports, though.
That's a good point.
That was probably the highlight of day one of the World Cup was this Brazilian girl. I don't know if you know anything about Brazilian girls from the internet, but she was just like, I mean, you know, how do I say this being crude?
She was blessed.
She had, yeah, she was well endowed. Okay. You know, in the pectoral area. You know what that's like.
I know exactly what that's like.
But she just, yeah, showed him during the game. There's a nice GIF on the internet. And she, I think she was trying to distract.
I think I'm going to really like the World Cup when I start Googling it when I get home. That sounds like,
yeah, this is definitely a better thing. World Cup than last time. Last time was like the Vuvuzela World Cup. You know, all you heard was that horn. Man, it's useless to talk about this.
Yeah,
subject.
I know. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Yeah, if you're listening at home, Vuvuzelas, that was a really loud horn. It just made like a sound. Like, I can do it one more time if you want.
Do it one more time, no, just to, so I can get, like, the sense of it.
I was like, yeah, it's like a whistling sound. But they would hand these things out the stadium because that World Cup was, I don't even remember what that one was. But it was just like basically it kind of ruined the games for people. Like, it was just so loud.
Was it like to, like, psych out the teams?
It was, I guess they were handed out to be like a cheering thing, you know?
Oh. But, yeah. Okay. See, I'm not a sports guy.
Like, go team,
understand.
Like, in the same way that you might make a noisemaker at New Year's Eve, you know? Like, or a birthday party, but like on a bigger scale.
Okay.
Yeah.
All experiences I don't have much familiarity.
Mm. I'm glad you chose a different word than experience after you said experiences.
What could I have said?
I thought you were going to be like, those are experiences I don't have a lot of experience with.
That did sound stupid.
And in that moment, I was like, Joe just got a better vocab than that. That's why he's writing a dissertation. How many words are you up to?
32. That's why I've been having a...
32,000.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm having a day-to-day because what would be the title? Like the person, not tutor or mentor.
The guy who reviews it or whatever?
Yeah. She posted on my Facebook that she's like worried, like, I don't think you're doing this right. And in my heart, I'm like, no, I'm doing this.
She posted that on your Facebook?
Yeah. She's like, are you thinking about this or are you just typing?
That's weird that she would interact with you like in that capacity on Facebook. Well, so you're going to like post your dissertation on Facebook and she likes it, then you pass.
Yeah. Only,
she shares it, then you get it published in a magazine or something. What is it on?
It's on just stories about my life, really. At this point, I'm talking...
You're allowed to do a dissertation on that?
Well, I'm studying creative writing.
Oh, well, that makes sense then.
Yeah.
If it's creative.
Yeah, it's a creative. Yeah. Creative nonfiction on good old Jesus.
How does that play in the comedy? Like, that must help a little bit, right?
I mean, it does, but it doesn't work as well as it can just because some of the stuff, you probably know this. There are things that, like, you have bits that you know. Well, I have things I want to say on stage that I know won't be funny because I don't know how to do them yet.
That's the thing. It's just, yeah. But the fact that you've expressed those emotions or whatever came out of that writing, yeah, probably at some point you have the emotion, and that, like, almost serves as the premise, you know? And then,
yeah,
like, you'll think of something funny maybe to put in it. I wouldn't know because my comedy is very impersonal. Like,
I've noticed that.
Yeah.
And I've heard people talk about that.
Yeah. Cool. Let's discuss that. Yeah.
Well, yeah, because your style is very impersonal. Almost, like, the word that immediately popped in my head was like, oh, it's a little sanctimonious, but that's not the right.
Cool, man. Well, it's been nice podcasting with you.
Nice knowing you.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, like, how did you come to that? Like, I'm going to tell jokes that are not far from the heart, but like they're like they don't reveal too much about you.
I don't really do it intentionally. I think I'm just not at the point yet where I'm comfortable talking about personal stuff. That's all.
Okay.
Not that I'm not comfortable. Like, every time I kind of try to do something, like, I'm not willing in my own mind to, like, go that far with it. And so it's just, like, its own mental block.
Is it like a fear thing? Or is it more like,
I don't
even probably won't be good?
Think it's that. It's just, like, right now, maybe it's, like, I don't want to do the mental exercise of, like, how did that feel? And, like, what was I thinking? And, you know, when certain things that I could talk about in my life, you know, I did briefly a bit about like, a breakup, and I did a bit like, I can't remember that might've been the only one actually.
It might be the only thing.
Yeah. But it just, and that maybe like, that may just be the style I'm going towards. Like, there's a lot of comics that, you know, they don't do that stuff. Like, I mean, and, you know, like, not that it wouldn't be a comparison, but, like, Dan Mintz or Mitch Hedberg, or those, they're, like, jokes, you know?
Yeah.
I wouldn't, like, that doesn't demean their great jokes, but, like, they never talk about themselves. They're like, here's a silly thing, and now here's another silly thing, you know? Mm-hmm. Even Stephen Wright, I mean, I guess I brought up mostly one-liner types, but that seems to be the type of comic that does, like, do impersonal stuff, but...
Is that where you kind of see yourself as? In...
No.
Okay.
I'm just, like I said, I'm just not there yet. I want to get there, you know? Like, I have a bunch of writing that I've done that's just, like, about stuff that's happened in my life. And I actually feel like there's humor in it, or even I might have already written, like, semi-funny stuff to me anyway that I haven't tried it on mic. But I just, like, not. I don't want to do it yet, you know?
Yeah.
But, yeah, just, like, I feel like, though, if I can knock down that door. Because I'm the first year and change that I've been doing comedy is just, like, has been about getting comfortable on stage yet. It's taken me way longer than, like, you just hopped on a stage and seemed pretty comfortable right off the bat. And that's really? Cool. And I'm sure you have, like, well, yeah, I'm sure, like, in your head you don't feel 100% comfortable, but you appear that way.
Hmm.
But for me, like, 6 months of it was just, like, learn to not stare at the ground.
Okay. You
know? And that's just, like... I don't know. That is, like, that was a fear thing, you know? Just, like, fear of public speaking or fear of, you know, what people are going to think of you.
Just the pressure of having eyes on you.
Yeah. Luckily, when I first started, that came across as endearing. And then as soon as, like, I wasn't just doing open mics, then it was like, well, how about you, like, learn to get your shit together and perform, you know?
Huh.
Not, like... Well, it would just be like, that would be any feedback that I would get would be like, man, you know, your jokes are all right. Just like, yeah, as a performer, you're not like, I wouldn't speak clearly. A lot of times I'd rush everything.
I feel that sometimes where like you'll have a bit where you don't feel like, or maybe you're not the best, not you personally, but like you have a bit that's like, oh, I'm not a good vehicle for this bit right now because I'm just not good enough.
What you're saying is that like you're a good writer, but not a good performer. That's basically what it is. Yeah. And that's just like, because it's two completely different aspects of comedy.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, writing and performing. Yeah. But, you know, over time, like, yeah, and I'll find, like, the more comfortable I am, like, the slower I'll go and, like, make observations about the room or, like, what I'm feeling.
Yeah, I've been noticing that. Like, when you get comfortable, you kind of, like, you'll start really responding to the room.
Yeah, or just, like, what's in my own head. I'll just trust myself. If I say that, then, you know, it'll come across at least compelling, if not funny.
Yeah, lately, as you've been doing that, it's been like, oh, man, that's awesome.
Yeah, not as sanctimonious as much?
Not as much. Cool. Not as much.
Yeah, I'm going to hold that against you for a long time.
That's fine.
Yeah.
That's fine. You don't need
First, I'm going to Google sanctimonious, and then I'm going to hold it against you for a long time.
It means holier than thou.
Yeah, it's pretentious. Yeah, I know all the words, too, Joe.
You're the language guy. Of course you would. I should remember the story.
Just
the,
no, it's fine.
I remember, let me think. There was a thing that I wanted to ask you, and it's probably not going to be cool that I ask it, and if it's not cool, you don't have to answer it.
Okay, yeah, I thought this was going to be fun.
I'm having fun.
No, I'm just, yeah.
No, but it's like, okay, there's a thing that I've heard... Like, you'll get into, because I know, and I'm only saying this because it's happened and I've been responsible for it. You'll get into, like, a funk on stage when things aren't going super good to the point where it's, like it's a negative, like, it's like you're, like, you have an emotional reaction to it as it's happening. And I only say that because I remember the one time, like, back in October when I tried to take a mic stand from you, and that was totally... It's like one of the worst moments of my entire life.
Oh, no, dude. Oh, that was just completely... I mean, remember if you remember that whole night was kind of a shit show. And, yeah, it was just like everyone was... It was just a struggle to, like... There was a small crowd, just a struggle to be heard. And at that point, there were, like, people talking in the crowd. Like, you know, just... So that was just... Yeah. That wasn't a reaction against you. That was just, like... That was, I would think, was a singular moment. But, yeah, there was a point where, like, especially at first when I started doing comedy, it would be, like, if I wasn't doing well, I would, like, that would be it for, like, if my first two jokes didn't go over, you know, just kind of like check out mentally.
Really?
Yeah. And just be like, yeah. And if it can still happen where like, I trust myself now more, but like, yeah, it can still happen where like, if a bit just doesn't go well, I might get like a little in my head about it, you know, instead of being like, well, it's worked before and you have other materials, just keep going. You know, that I'll do that more now, but early on I had a tendency to just like let that sabotage the whole thing. Yeah.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. That's a hard thing to learn how to deal with. Because it's like even it's like, oh, you know it's good, but it's like in the moment when there's no one responding to shit you're saying.
Yeah.
That's a nightmare. Like recurring for me.
Yeah, I mean, comedy sucks sometimes. Like, it does. Yeah. Especially when you're starting out, because you're going to be bad at it, you know. But, yeah, that's the thing that, like, some people just have, again, like, a natural confidence where, like, they can overcome that. But, yeah, for me, like, yeah, it would put me in a funk. Like, I would be, like, checked out, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. that was a thing I was curious about. Just because it's something that people have actually, like, in passing, that's something people have said about you.
Okay, cool.
Not in a negative way. It's just like, well, here's a thing about Sella that you might want to be, to know about, JoJo, in case, yeah. Because the moment after that happened, the thing with the mic stand, which is I'm going to go back to, because that was a thing that I felt shitty about for about 2 weeks.
Well, you shouldn't, yeah.
Yeah, well, I did. And what was weird was people were coming out of the woodwork after you left. Because right after you hopped off stage, you like, I think you and Patton just took off. I don't know where you guys went. But after that happened, like 4 or 5 different people at different times of the night came backstage and were like, they were like, JoJo, don't worry about it. Everything was cool. Mike just gets like that sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sorry I did that still.
No, to this man. Day. Yeah. They were right, you know? Like, comedy, like, you feel like you're being, I feel like, you know, like you're being judged all the time. So it puts me in a totally different mindset. Yeah. You know, it's hard to not, like, just like constantly feel the need to get over, you know, especially with your peers and stuff, you know, something I work on. And, yeah, that's probably what happened there.
Okay.
Yeah. Was just like, yeah, I mean like, and then you just, you know, you wait around. It was probably, that was just like, I honestly don't remember. So like, not that I don't remember that happening, just the details of like what I was thinking, but mostly it's just like, yeah, you wait to go up at a mic.
Right.
You know, the turnout's not great. And then you just want to, like, try, like, to work at it. And then, like, I perceived that you're just kind of goofing off, you know.
Uh-huh.
Like, being silly. Like, didn't care that I was whoever. It wasn't personal. Just, like, whoever was on stage.
Right.
You know. And, like, I remember, too, like, I was already, like, you know, there's no one to talk to here. But I'm just going to push through it. I remember having that conversation, like, with someone else. They're like, well, just, you know, just like, let's just get through this and then I'll be work on being like professional or whatever.
Right.
Yeah, I'm going to do that. And I was like in the middle of that. And then that, I just saw that and it's just like, yeah, it just like made me angry, you know? Like, God damn right, it. I was trying, you know?
Like, yeah, I know that, man. What got you into it? Into doing comedy? Like, what was the thing that kind of like, I'm going to start going to mics and make this my nightlife? Like, what was the catalyst, as it were?
Probably the movie Jack and Jill.
Are you being serious right now?
No, there was, like, when I was going to Davis, I was working at a radio station there, like, just college radio. One of the guys who ran the station was doing, like, open mics as well.
Uh-huh.
Oh, it wasn't as well yet. I guess that's where it starts. Like, he just told me I should go out to him. Like, he just did a set of comedy at, like, a music show.
Uh-huh.
And I thought it was cool. Like, you know, he just kind of had the microphone set up and just did, like, you know, I don't know, 5 or 10 minutes. Just because he knew the band that was playing.
Right.
And then I just was talking to him about it. And then we would just, like, hang out. And then he was like, yeah, you should go try an open mic. And then it went for, like, 3 weeks, you know, building up the courage to go up. And then, basically, because I had never grown up, like, wanting to be a stand-up comic. I never thought about it. But it looked fun, and then also what motivated me was just, like, seeing people who were terrible and thinking, like, I could do way better than that, you know, like, then the pride, I guess, kicked in, and I was like, oh, yeah, let's try it, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And then, but also just, like, it looked fun. Like, I just, you know, I was like, let's see if, it's like, if, you know, just what anybody thinks, like, that they're funny. And they can go up and make a bunch of people laugh by telling the same jokes they tell their friends, you know? And then you realize, you know, it's like an art form and you have to learn how to tell stuff that goes over on stage.
There's a thoughtfulness that you need to have.
Like, I had no awareness of that. Like, some people do. Like, they know what stand-up comedy is before they start.
Uh-huh.
And for me, I was just like, no, this is something anyone can do, you know?
Okay.
So, yeah.
Well, that's cool that you kept with it because I, from what I understand, that kind of... that impulse to do it, that fades. But it seems like you've kind of taken to it in a really... Because you seem more, you're dedicated to it in like a very real way, and you make shit happen for yourself. I don't, but like yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I immediately think of the ways that like I'm not dedicated and don't make stuff happen for myself.
Really?
But, yeah, like, but that's just yeah. But I can see ways where maybe I do. So, but when you say that, I'm like, nah, I'm not.
Maybe it's a greener grass thing. Because, like, I remember when...
Well, I definitely feel like I'm not dedicated enough.
Really?
Like, yeah.
In what way?
And just, like, you know, honestly, to be... to like, just the astronomical odds to make it in this, I guess, industry or whatever.
Yeah.
In show business or whatever. Or just, like, to get better at stand-up, you know. Sacramento's an awesome community. It's just not as much... like. People move to L.A. or New York, you know, partly because that's where industry is and also because, like, there's stuff every night. Like, you can hit, like, 6 or 7 mics in a night if you work it out correctly, you know. Do, like, at least 4 or 5 sets a night. Here I'm doing, like, 2-3 mics a week. And, you know, sometimes I skip the ones I should go to. I feel guilty about it all the time. So, like, last week I went to just one mic. Luna's the one I... And, yeah, it's just, like... basically, you know, whatever age you are, and there's no age limit to, like, you know, when you have to make it, but, you know, it's secrets out. Like, you were not living that long, probably.
Yeah.
You know? And then, it's just math. Like, you know, how much, if you're writing, how much stuff can you work out? How much experience can you get on stage in a small city versus a big city? And then even... failing that, it's like, I have a full-time job, like, that eats up a lot of my time. Like, I feel like I should be going home, taking the thoughts I had that I had written down, and just, like, at least trying to make, like, 1 or 2 things out of them every night. But realistically, that happens, like, once a week. And even, like, just the laziness of not writing down, like, what you think is funny, you know, like the Mitch Hedberg joke. Like, half the time, like, I won't write it down. Or even just days will pass... or I'll just be in, like, a mental funk, and I just, like, don't feel, like, thinking of anything funny, you know? Like, and I won't have, like, the fortitude to, like, make myself, like, not be, like, depressed or whatever kind of emotions are invading. Like, yeah, basically, if this is your pursuit, like, you should at least be able to block some of that out and just be like, no, this is my time where I write, and I'm going to go to open mics, but... I haven't learned to, like, push that stuff aside, you know, and instead I'll just, like, let it, you know, cancel a few mics for me or, like, push off writing for a few days. And then before you know it, you're, like, 42, you know? So it's, like...
yeah.
Yeah. But that... so when you say that, like, yeah, that's what I think is, like, I just... you know. But some people just have, like, a lot of natural talent, so maybe they don't need as much... no, I feel like I need to work at it.
Though. Okay.
So, yeah.
You feel, so you, okay. So you're, so if I'm hearing what you're saying right, is you feel like personally, like you're not
that rambling.
You're not doing as much as you could do or as much as you feel like maybe would be the right amount for you as a
Yeah, I mean, in a way where we could all do more, right? But like, yeah, I feel like realistically though, looking at it, like I could be going to mics probably like, I could probably have like 3 times as much stage time, if not more, in any week.
Yeah.
If I was really, like, you used the word dedicated, if I was really dedicated to it. And I could probably do, like, 5 or 6 times the amount of actual writing that, like, I do now, you know? Just, like, with the amount of, like, thoughts I have, if every, like, 40 of them are dumb and there's one good one, but if I just wrote those 40 things down and spent even 20 minutes a night, just finding that one or two, you know,
yeah.
That's the lot, the realistic math of probably where,
yeah,
where it is. And then, yeah, that's just the, I guess the cut and dry of it. Then also the mental barriers, like I'm saying, like where probably that's what led me to stick with it in the beginning is like, you know, you're going to be bad in the beginning, but like, I'm like, no, well, I know I have this level in my head. Like I need to just learn how to pick my eyes up, make some eye contact, be a little confident. Like now that I'm halfway there, I would say like, I'm just trying to work on like, you know, it's like developing your voice or whatever.
Right.
But like now I'm just like tickling the edges of the outside of that, figuring out like where I can just like really dive into that. Especially like once you do that, then you become like actively engaged. You get in like a flow state, you know, like with any other endeavor, like athletes talk about getting in a flow state where you're just like, you're not really thinking about everything else. You just, maybe you do it when you're writing, like creative writing wise.
It's like an effortlessness to just perform.
Yeah, you blocked out all those weird voices, you know, you might edit stuff later, but you're just kind of focused. You're not letting other thoughts in and you're just engaged. You've put in the work and you're at the point where you have the ability to do something. So just kind of let it flow. And I haven't reached a flow state with comedy yet, but uh-huh. like I get there sometimes like with ideas. Now I'm in the idea stage. Like I'm like, I latch on to like a more personal thing. Like we were talking about before. I'm like, this is how I want to talk about this. Yes. And I'm like engaged and I follow that train of thought. Maybe I'll be like walking, because walking is really good for like keeping one continuous thought.
Yeah.
Or in the shower, you know, because you always think what you're thinking in the shower is genius. But like, those are the times when like distractions don't get to me. And I'm like, that's where I want to go with like maybe stuff about like having been overseas or just like personal thoughts or whatever. Growing up religious, I have like a ton of stuff I want to talk about in that regard. But just like, I don't want to touch it yet. But like, lately I've been writing it all down. So that's uh-huh. the next step. But now it's just like getting in that flow state with like looking at it from a comedic angle, trusting like the writing ability that I've developed so far, mm-hmm. the whatever 2 years worth of writing ability, and just like making that what I talk about them. And then along the way, you're just like picking up little things like other comics have pointed out, like just to work on one thing, performance aspect every time.
Right.
So like if you're on stage and you have trouble making eye contact, just do that the whole time. If you have trouble like moving outside of your little circle where the microphone is, just try to walk all the way to one side of the stage, try to walk over to the other. That's uh-huh. your goal for the set. Before you know it, you're capable of walking around. You're capable of, you know, sitting down on the stool. You're capable of leaning on the wall. Some people don't struggle with that. They're just natural performers in front of people. But, you know, for others, like, you just kind of, like, start to build those tools, and then it all comes together.
To do them comfortably. Yeah, I've never thought of
that. You walk around, like, you pace, you know?
Yeah.
You'll kind of pace back and forth. But you seem to make eye contact.
Yeah.
Or at least glance out over people's heads, the illusion of eye contact.
Yeah, I learned that from when I had to teach.
You were a teacher?
Well, when I was at school and on the East Coast, I had to, part of the deal was I had to teach two classes. Teach two classes a semester. And I learned, like, that's stressful when you have to sit there and have 18-year-olds stare at you and not care about anything you have to say.
Yeah.
That's fun.
Yeah, teaching is a whole different beast, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
You have to have a heart for it.
Yeah.
Where did you grow up?
Where did I grow up?
Yeah.
I grew up around here.
Okay, but you were on the East Coast for school.
Yeah, I moved to a small town in upstate New York called Binghamton I was there for 2 years, and I taught there. When I was there, I had to teach the whole time in order to just live and whatnot. And then after 2 years, I moved back here.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Cold?
Oh, my God, yeah.
Yeah.
Cold and gray, and it's I didn't know people could live like that.
That's near where West Point is, right?
Is it?
Is it?
I'm not sure.
Binghamton is, but
it's on the border. It's right by Scranton, Pennsylvania.
Oh, okay.
It's on the Pennsylvania New York border.
Yeah, I've been to Scranton. Yeah,
I've been to Scranton too.
Wilkes-Barre. Yeah,
I would go there to get my oil changed.
Oh, that's an interesting anecdote about Scranton.
Yeah, yeah. They have a Jiffy Lube there.
They used to have a minor league baseball team there.
I think, isn't the office set there?
Yep.
Okay. Scranton it is.
We've all the facts about Scranton are out there on the table now.
I think that's all there is about Scranton, honestly.
Also, the office was set there. Yeah.
In case we didn't, you know that show, The Office?
What show?
Yeah.
With Office Space, you mean? The movie?
No, the show.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
This is dumb.
I know.
Yeah.
We didn't have to do it. Well, we did anyway. Nice. Yeah, I was there for 2 years, and I learned to deal with rooms of people who don't care about what you have to say.
So pretty much every class was just bombing, basically.
Basically, yeah. In every class, you had to...
Even if they are laughing, like, you're still bombing because you're supposed to be teaching them.
Yeah. Yeah. It's weird. Like, when you have to teach people, they don't... Like, at a college level, like, if you wanted to teach kids... You have to, like, take a test for that, at least. If you want to teach adults at a college, no training whatsoever. They don't tell you anything. It's just like, hey, you're teaching. Here's where you need to be. Here's a syllabus. Have fun with it. And that's it. That's all the training you get. So most people don't have to care about it. And I really cared about it because I was like, well, I have to be in front of people talking for an hour.
Yeah.
Maybe an hour and a half.
What subjects?
I had to teach alternative literature, which is like comic books and shit, which was cool. I had to teach children's literature.
What was your primary?
My main thing?
Yeah, well, I never got text to in that alternative literature class.
We had a lot of novels and a lot of random stuff.
All right.
And I taught them like Why the Last Man. And I taught I taught them the book Cruddy.
That Brian K. Vaughan?
Huh?
Is that Brian K. Vaughan, Why the Last Man? Is the same guy that wrote Saga, because I'm reading Saga now.
It's probably
right. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's good stuff, man.
Yeah. I had to teach them I Am Legend.
Wow.
What
about Sandman? Did you work that in?
Yeah, I had to teach
them. Is that
too dark? No. Well, we had this weird, like, Sandman story that was drawn as, like, a manga that we had to teach them. Like, it was called The Dream Catcher, I think.
Okay.
Or The Dream Hunter.
Yeah, because Sandman would be good because it pulls from so many, like, you know, mythology. And,
yeah.
And the rest of the Marvel Universe, you know?
Yeah. So, yeah. It was, it, this, the one the I was DC teaching, universe. it was all like, hey, here's the Chinese or Japanese mythology mixed with, you know, Sandman. It was cool. It was fun to look at the book, but talking to a room full of people about, hey, here's why you should care about this. Here's what's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're like, this isn't going to help me get laid. So
no.
Yeah.
No, it was not.
I could tell by, you know, who's teaching it. No,
I remember the first, I got to get reviewed. They reviewed me at the end of every semester, and like one of the first reviews I got was he's nice, but he seems like he's on a power trip with this whole teaching thing. So apparently,
even though that was like your whole goal was like to be in charge of the room,
yeah, that was like my job.
Yeah,
still like, hey, I have to control what you guys do for an hour.
Yeah. Did you let him chew gum or what?
Oh yeah, I was cool. I was like, you can chew gum, you can look at your phone, just like if I ask a question, I just don't want people to be completely silent because that's painful.
Yeah.
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 I had to learn to sit with silence with teaching.
So that prepared you for like guest hosting Luna's
on Tuesday.
Yeah.
No, Luna's is nice on Tuesdays.
Yeah, it is.
Comedy
yeah.
Spot's a nightmare.
Yeah.
On Mondays.
Yeah. I don't even go on Mondays anymore.
I know.
I guess I'll stop feeling guilty for not going.
Yeah, don't feel guilty.
Yeah,
it's a. If I wasn't being paid, I would have gone somewhere else, which is mean to say, but it's true. If I wasn't getting paid to be there, I would leave.
There's not too many other options. Though. That's what I'm saying. Like,
yeah, that's the tough part.
Yeah.
But what can you do?
Well,
small town comics right now. We can't do much about it.
No, that's the thing. Is like, yeah, Sacramento also, the cons are there. For being in a small town pursuing something like that, but then the pros are, you know, get more opportunity than you may normally get, you know.
That's true.
Like, odds are that both of us wouldn't be, like, hosting or running shows, like, or just, like, on a lot of shows early on in a big city.
That's
know?
True.
You know.
I've heard that
you want to start in a small city. Like you want to start doing, like, learning how to do it in a small city, because you don't want to go to a big city to learn how to do it. You want to go to a big city with kind of some
crushed
experience. Yeah, because it's like, well, you can go to 8 or 9 mics in a night, sure, but you're not going to have the perspective to understand what happened time to time just because you haven't been doing it long enough. Like if your first night you went to 4 mics, you wouldn't learn anything.
Any of them. That's a little bit advanced, I guess, at that point.
Yeah,
most people are like, all right, I did that, so I'll come back next month.
That's true.
People, a lot of times I hear that scramble, they're like, oh, there's one tomorrow? I'm like, oh, I guess I could do that.
I do get that from time to time. We get a lot of like random, it's weird. The open mic scene here is very closed for being an open mic scene, which I don't know if that's true in bigger cities.
Or just like randoms off the street, drunk guys.
Yeah, or it's more like, it's really the same cast of people week to week in a way that's like, I don't know if that would be normal in a bigger city. And it literally is like the same list pretty much week to week, other than maybe one person who brought all their friends out for a thing. I don't know.
Probably not worth thinking about.
Probably not.
No, but
give me a complex about where I am in my life. That wouldn't be good.
No, so like there's pros and cons to it, but yeah, when you bring up that, like, I don't know why I just, you said I seem really dedicated to it, and I immediately just thought of all the ways I'm not. And even, so like, even the few mics that are available, you know, even if it's one a night, I don't go to one a night. So
well,
it doesn't
have
to be about, like, the opportunity. Just like me. I don't feel like I'm going hard in the paint, so to speak, to use another basketball term.
That I don't, yeah, I don't have.
Sports.
Well, I mean, like, you run a mic and you do the monthly show at
the
spot. That's more than I do, and it seems like you've had more opportunities than I have. So I guess I'm compared to me, like, oh, Mike Sell is doing it.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
I guess it is always like a grass is greener thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. But at the same time, running shows can be a headache too. You know, like, it's cool to have the opportunity to kind of, you know, you're in control, like, maybe not with the mic, because that's just, but like on the show at Comics, I can go up there every month, do new stuff, do whatever I feel like doing, you know. And that's a certain amount of freedom,
right?
That you may not get if it wasn't your own thing.
Oh yeah, definitely.
But running a show, it's like you got to deal with all the other crap. For
people
every like person who are like, thanks for having me on, there's like 30 who are like, yo, you're an asshole for not having me on yet. You know, they just think that means something, like about how you feel about them as a person. You know.
Yeah, I can understand that.
Yeah, there's people who just like have just gotten angry that they're not on the show.
Really?
And realistically, these comics, like I have 50 minutes a month to give out. You know.
Uh-huh.
It's not a lot of time
to
give out, you know.
And you give, and it's like, it's a good show because you give like 10, 15 minutes.
Yeah, at first we were having a bunch of people on, and I didn't really even want to do it that way, but we were trying to get like more new people on it. But yeah, it just doesn't work as a show like that.
Seems lately it's been like 3, maybe 4.
Yeah, I like 4. Like if I host and I have 3 other people, like, I feel like that works.
Okay.
Like working one kind of, like you were the kind of newer comic once. You know, doing a shorter set, and then I have 2 people doing like 10-minute sets around me doing the like opening 7 to 10.
Comes
out to 50. You know,
kind of
works out that way. Yeah, but I'd rather be in your position, like back in the kind of the just starting out. You know, that's if people, and that doesn't mean it's gonna. It's just like people come in and they're pretty good right away, and they get hot, they get a bunch of shows. And it just kind of fades. That doesn't mean that's what's going to happen to you because you're a good comic. It's just like, it could, you know, it's like, just like it could happen to anyone. But I remember like when I finally started getting over not doing well in the beginning, started doing better, get a bunch of shows. There was a stretch where I was just getting a lot of shows, you know, and then not like, you know.
Yeah.
Just like, and then, you got to keep working at it. You know, I mean, I can name names. It would be weird to do that. But, like, I can just think off the top of my head 4 or 5 examples of just, like, people who came on the scene, got a bunch of stuff, and then they're kind of, like, not getting as much stuff. And now they're just, like, the rest. They're not. It's like a novelty. You're new. You're kind of good. not you, it's like those people, you know.
But in, yeah, there are people who, yeah.
And I'd rather have that, like have some of that anonymity back, not have had people see like literally every single open mic set I've ever done, you know.
Yeah.
It's just like, yeah, because I feel like that's another thing. It's like I don't take open mic seriously enough, not because I think I'm like for any reason like that, like I'm too good for an open mic. Because that's just mostly because like it's just a mental thing. Like if it's a show, I'm like, yeah, I'm ready to.
You'll amp yourself up in a way that you won't do.
Yeah, and yeah. I had a weird thing about like always wanting to do something new and really like not having a good gauge of like when something is like ready for the stage. I'd be like, oh, I'm just gonna go up with a bunch of this crap and it's new, so that'll be good and it'll work itself out on stage. You know, and then I see people who are in a more advanced place, and yeah, they do some new stuff, but it's like they had at least polished it a little bit. It was like a bit. It wasn't just like a bunch of crap they had written down that day. They had put effort into it. That always boggled me too, like the amount of stuff I would say just to a group of people, like wanting validation that like, and how little I actually put into like thinking about what I was saying. So now I've kind of like recaged that and tried to think about like, you know, what is this even saying?
Like, so like at first you would say stuff just to see like if you could get some kind of response?
Yeah, like but like that, that only works if you're like pretty well into your career, you know, where you can just like throw out a topic and trust your own comedic chops to just like make it funny. Like, here's what I've been thinking about. You know, that's like when you're like 10 years in, you know, not like as a rule, just like I've heard comics like maybe on Pete Holmes' show talk about that, where they get into like constructing their approach to comedy and they'd be like, you know, once they're like at a stage where like maybe they've even been on TV once or twice and then they're like, now I just go to mics and start talking about subjects, see if people are interested. Oh, it was like Kyle Kinane. I got the chance to talk to him after that show he did.
Oh,
and
yeah.
He was saying, yeah, like now I do mics differently. Like I'll just start talking about stuff. And like I'll have a couple of ideas, but they're mostly just ideas. And then I'll just kind of work them out on stage. You know, sorry if I messed that up, Kyle. I know he's listening. But no, but like, that does, yeah, I'm not, at least to me, I'm not at the point where I'm just like, yeah, I'm just going to talk about how I feel about global warming for a second. I think I remember two funny points I had about it. Let me pull that all together. You know, but that's how I was approaching it. Like, I just go to mics and do that, you know. And then.
So you had, like, the attitude of someone who's been doing it a long time, but not.
Yeah, not, like, intentionally. Like,
I wasn't
just, like, I was kind of approaching it the wrong way. Okay. And then a lot of people were like, man, like, you should look at open mic as a. It's just another opportunity for people to see you, you know? So now I'm like, I'm not as, I don't want to say ashamed, but I'm like, I'm not as reticent to repeat myself, even if I did the same jokes a week ago, like just to work it out, you know?
That's weird. Like I do.
That's what I was doing at Luna's. It's like my goal when I started Luna's was like, oh, I'm just going to do a new five every week.
Yeah.
And that's maybe not super ambitious, but like, it just, like I said, with the time I wasn't spending writing, it wasn't working out. And I would just keep kind of doing that same kind of like set. It's not like I was practicing what I was going to say. So it was like stumbly.
Uh-huh.
And then all of a sudden I was like, yeah, I'm just going to start doing stuff that I trust a little bit more. Maybe work one or two new ones in, kind of mimicking some of the other people the way I saw them do it. And
it
just started working better, you know? But.
It's weird to me.
Just because I realized there are a whole lot of people who, like, for whatever reason, like, yeah, would just hadn't seen me, like, do well on a show. And, like, and I would go down to San Francisco, like, pretty frequently. I feel like that's more my scene in terms of, like, where I'm going to get over.
Yeah.
I mean, you like to do well in all kinds of rooms, but realistically, for me, like, that's just an easier place for me to do comedy.
San Francisco?
Yeah. And I feel like.
Do you think some of it's the novelty factor or just because like you're more comfortable, like the rooms are more comfortable?
I feel like the crowd is just more on the level of what I'm saying, I guess sometimes.
Like the audience would be better tuned to Mike Sella style jokes.
Or just certain people, that's just how it is. I was having this conversation with someone else the other day. They're just like, yeah, you notice how we do a lot better there and have a better reputation there. And, but it's just, it also sometimes is like, yeah, you're new, so they're going to like, but not just amongst comics, I mean, crowds, I'm saying, like, I just think the crowds are, just more my style of crowd. Sacramento is, the crowds are, they're just like, they can be good. It's, they're a really good mixture of like all of America. I feel like it's really,
yeah, I kind of get that sense,
you know?
Yeah.
Like, I feel like you can go out and hit the road, go on a tour anywhere. And if it worked in Sacramento, it'll probably work in any number of those cities.
Uh-huh.
But I don't know. It's, yeah.
It would be easier to get a room full of your people in San Francisco.
Not just like, me. Like, I don't know what the term for it is, you know. It's just, there's different, you know, types of comedy.
Yeah.
Like, we had, like, on the last comics, yeah, that's how we're talking about that.
Yeah. Was it, like, all different styles or something, or was it just, like...
Yeah, I guess with being super vague, like, yeah... I've had comics on come down from the Bay who, like, I think are really funny.
Uh-huh.
And then realizing, like, it's just not the room for them, you know?
Oh, least, okay.
Yeah. And so, I didn't mean to be, like, just put me, like, lump me in that hole. This is my city. This isn't my city. It's just, like, I think it's styles of comedy, you know?
Yeah, yeah. No, there are clearly styles of comedy that would work better in some environments than others.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you could say it's not necessarily the city for, like, alti stuff, you know?
Sacramento is?
Yeah, it's not. Yeah.
Okay, yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely, yeah.
That doesn't mean, like, you shouldn't, you know, be able to do well. It's just, like...
You shouldn't, yeah. You shouldn't pursue. You should not pursue if you want to do alti stuff.
Yeah, but it's hard to, like, kind of keep yourself at a certain level or to, like, try to play smart or whatever when, like, you're constantly reaching back into the bag to, like... Dig yourself out of things.
Oh, yeah. Like, it's hard to gauge whether or not what you're doing is good if the crowd is never with you. Or if the thing that you really care about, the crowd, is it's not for them. That would be irritating, I think.
Yeah.
If I had a bit that I knew that in my heart I liked, but a room full of people would never acknowledge it, that would be disheartening.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. I don't know. That's the price of having to do an art form where validation is half of it.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, you really can't just let your stuff stand out there by itself.
Yeah. Yeah. That's kind of why I got into it, actually, is that aspect of it.
Yeah, I just wanted people to want to see, wanted that immediate, that immediate response.
Yeah, and that the response was honest, that I could gauge it in a way. Yeah. Because it's like with any other type of art form, it's like, hey, even if you suck at this, people will probably clap when you're done.
Yeah.
Comedy's not like that.
No.
At all.
Because, yeah, bad comedy is so hard to take, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They'll clap that you're leaving, but they won't clap that you did well. And right. Then you have to be up there with silence. There's something about that that's nice, I think.
Yeah.
But, I don't know. Yeah. So how you feeling, man?
Feel okay? I don't know. We're pretty negative for this whole talk.
You think so?
Yeah.
I don't know. We kind of dug deep into talking about...
That was cool. We got to the bottom of stuff, but we're definitely not like, oh, everything's great. I don't know.
That's not the goal.
No, you wanted to get real.
We could get real if you want to talk...
You wanted to get real dark with it, yeah.
We went super dark with it. Nah. We kind of sort of touched on sad... Yeah. If you want, you can bust out a sad story. I could bust out a sad story.
You got
story
the sanctimonious story. Thing in there.
I did. Yeah. That's going to come back to haunt me
you
at some
the,
point.
You got the other sources of people talking about my comedy. So we got all that in there.
You're going to be suspicious of people.
We talked about how, I could get in a funk on stage. So, yeah. I think... Yeah.
Have I done permanent damage?
We talked about basically all the aspects of my comedy and life that I want to talk about, you know? Like okay. That's, yeah.
Is there anything you want to touch on?
Are there any other weaknesses or faults that you wanted to bring up? Or?
I'm surprised you're wearing glasses right now.
Is that a weakness? Yeah.
Well,
more punchable?
You're immune to punches because you have the glasses on.
No, definitely.
I don't know.
You didn't know that about?
I didn't know that actually.
Yeah.
I thought you were a non-glasses dude.
No, I wear glasses.
Okay.
The times when I'm not, I'm wearing contacts. Yeah, which are just like little tiny glasses for your eyes.
You know, those aren't big enough to avert someone from wanting to hate you.
No.
Which is not good.
It's mostly a personality thing anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wear glasses. It's kind of getting late at night, you know, so I'm just kind of giving my eyes a break. You know, this is going to be a very audio thing.
Yeah, you wouldn't have to worry about seeing.
No one's going to see me.
No, looking
like a dork.
But you can imagine, if you're listening, you can imagine Mike Sella wearing glasses.
Yeah.
That's the full experience with the beard and the glasses. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then the lack of clothes.
It's pretty great.
Yeah, after I just like plowed through $9.50 worth of McDonald's.
Yeah, that was like, insane.
Yeah.
You said, I'm going to get food. And my head is like, oh, he's going to go to a nice, cool place and get like something good.
Yeah. And I'm going to go to a cool place down the street and get like a kale casserole or something, whatever. No, I, McDonald's is my place, man. I go there a couple times a week. But like, I do go through tiers of like fatness where like, just like, and fatness as like a mindset, as an attitude, you know, it reflects physically, but not quite where the point, but yeah, like today, you know, like I'm in the second tier, you know, now it's like where I'll get a value meal. And then like, you saw me, the Reese's McFlurry.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like there's a tier. Tier one is like where if you go to get a Reese's McFlurry, you're just getting the McFlurry, you know, or you're getting the value meal. Like, you don't need to get a whole, like, a full meal experience at McDonald's. You know? I need to eat a meal and then dessert. Like, you know, that's just too much. But, yeah, I went for it. And I didn't even feel like the last two times, so, like, Monday and today,
yeah,
that I went to McDonald's. I spent, yeah, like $9 of McDonald's is a decent amount of food, right?
That's a good amount of food. That's enough for two people.
But it's actually, like, where the point where it's like the bag's empty and I'm like, where's the rest of my food kind of thing. And that's just like, I'm like surprised because, you know, tier one a couple months ago was just like, you know, I'd be feeling disgusting after that. And now I'm like, where? I thought I got three more McChickens. Where is, you know.
So you're building a tolerance to McDonald's and other delicious fat things.
I'm just expanding my stomach is literally what's happening. Yeah. But really I'm just preparing because I'm going to Italy on Monday. And I just want
to
eat.
You're going to Italy on Monday?
Yeah, that's the reason for the tapes that we talked about an hour ago.
Really?
Yeah.
Why are you going to Italy on Monday?
Just on vacation, man. Just going with my family.
Oh, yeah. That's cool.
Yeah, we haven't really done like a family vacation.
Are you going to go to, like, towns and whatnot and see, like, oh, here's where the
cellos of old. I don't think we're going to get real, no. They're from Sicily, I think.
Oh, okay.
We're not going to Sicily. We're going to just the highlights. Rome, Venice, Florence, I think, is all we're going to go to. Yeah. And I'm just going to, like, I really am just going to eat a lot, you know.
Uh-huh.
Hit the touristy spots. I'm just going to go be, like, a fat American, you know. But I at least took the effort to learn like 12 phrases.
You learned how to be rejected by a random woman.
Yeah.
On every hour of the day.
Yeah.
So you could take over the world at that point, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Just with that level of language skill, like, hey, I could be rejected in another language.
Yeah. And keep, I mean, it'll really mess me up if at any point she's like, yeah, I'll go to lunch with you. I'll be like, wait, I'm not prepared for this.
I didn't get to that part.
I only learned how to keep taking no for an answer. Like,
that's a bit. You're gonna have to work that in somehow. I've only learned how to keep taking no as an answer.
Yeah, it's late at night, you know.
It's late at night, and I have had some rum, so maybe no. I feel it's good.
How was that? Was the Coke flat?
Yeah, actually it was. Yeah, I wasn't going to say anything. Cause
yesterday it wasn't, and I opened it, and I noticed the fizz was gone.
I mean, it was, you know? It was pleasant and made me feel good in my heart, so.
Good, I mean.
Complain about it.
Yeah.
But it was flat Coke.
Thanks for not, you know, bringing it up.
You're welcome. I didn't bring it up in a way that would be
recorded. I put it in
a
Coke glass, you know. I mean, yeah. I made you a fucking cocktail. Just drink it.
You're a great host. You're a great host. And a great dude.
Of the podcast? Or of the...
Well, you're a great guest in that sense. But you're a great host in having me at your place. And
oh, yeah.
Gym. Yeah.
Yeah, I'd like to have you over my place a lot of the time. We should do...
Okay.
Yeah, there's so much room here that we didn't have to cram ourselves in.
I know, but yeah. It's like this room actually has the best sound because of the couches and whatnot.
The couches make it a good sound?
Yeah, actually, because they're soft.
Are you just making shit up right now?
No, I'm not.
Just like it bounces off.
Yeah, yeah, like it absorbs.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Like in a room, like in a room with.
That's why I come here to fart.
Really?
Yeah, just because.
Because it's so comfy.
No one notices.
Okay.
Yeah, just kind of soaks it in.
It's good to know. Kind of gross, but good to know.
Yeah, don't sit on that section of the couch. That's the fart cushion.
Okay.
Yeah.
Amen. Think we covered everything?
I think so.
All right.
Yeah.
Thanks for talking to me, Mike.
All right, man. I had fun. Thanks, Joe.
Yeah, thanks.
It's cool. Yeah. Oh, they're not going to see us shake hands.
Hey, folks. Normally, this is the part where I have that awesome song, the cool, like, guitar riff song pop in. And I'm not going to do that right now because I need to tell you guys something that happened after the recording. You may have noticed I brought up something about Mike that... It is something that people have told me about him, and it is something that I know about him because I'm friends with the guy. I know the guy. Not great, but I know the guy. And he does have a tendency to kind of look inward and close off, and because that's just that's a state of being that's actually, it feels safe a little bit. And he says, I don't believe it, but he says he did that during our talk. Actually, right when I said it, he felt like he closed off and he didn't like it. And he did that maybe like he says a half hour or so in whenever I brought it up. And I found that hard to believe at the time. I thought it was very open. But here's the interesting thing. As soon as the mic shut off, as soon as I turned off the equipment, moved it to the side, he opened up. It was one of the strangest things I think I've encountered. Like he started, he was calmer. He was just talking. It was really nice. And it was like all the degrees of separation were gone between us as we were chatting. We were just talking about, you know, comedy and people we knew and just experiences. And it was really a nice, like we talked for another like 45 minutes after the mic shut off. And I wished we had gotten it, but then we didn't, and I think if we had gotten it, it probably wouldn't have been normal. It wouldn't have been what it was because – and this is what clued me in. Like this is the point of the podcast is I'm not doing this to just like stroke egos and present people. I know it seems that way. I'm aware of it. I'm doing this to talk to people and that after it's over, when the mics are off, that I have, you know, a rapport, that there are people in my life who know what's going on with me and who are genuinely interested, and I'm interested in them. And Mike, he did exactly that. He did it worked exactly the way I want it to. I turned the mics off. And the relationship continues. The friendship continues beyond the mic. I mean, granted, it happened immediately, but that is exactly what I wanted. And in my head, I'm like, this is what I wanted to record on the podcast, but I didn't get it. I got this in my life now. This is a part of who I am now, this talk that happened. And, you know, we've talked since. Like, he's a cool guy, and he goes out of his way to talk to me sometimes, and it's very pleasant. And I know, I feel like it's because the podcast helped create a space for it. So, anyway, I guess what I'm trying to get at is good talk. I had a fun time. Where the hell is the... Okay, there it is. Good, good. Next, really good talk with Mike Sella. Had a lot of fun. I hope you guys enjoyed it too. Next time on the show, next Friday, I have a pretty long talk with a pretty cool guy. You guys might know him as Alfonso Portella because that's what I know him as. Please check back again next week. My name has been JoJo Lewis. Thank you so very much for listening to The Liquor Lamp. Have a good one. And I told you, this was, you know. See ya.